It's just new screen. Welcome everyone to the late night show with Kaz Restaurant Guy. You know what? It's really cool that tonight is my first solo since we started doing this late night show. And we're super excited. I'm super excited. I used to say we. I'll be probably saying that all night for today's guest, saying we, because Dominic is usually with me. But unfortunately, Dominic couldn't make it tonight. So hopefully he's watching us. Dominic, you better be watching us if you are, wherever you are. Anyways, we have a great guest on tonight. And it is a hot topic of what we're going to talk to our guest about that I think everyone will want to lean in on this. Just a reminder to everyone on TikTok, we will definitely see you there. Please join us over there, as well as join us on Instagram and Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, everywhere else. We are live. So thanks again for joining the late night show. So we're going to have some fun tonight. And first of all, I want to introduce our guest. So let's, and I got a new screen, everyone, and it's about the size of a small flat screen TV or a big flat screen TV. It is so big. So anyways, so welcome everyone. And let's bring our next guest in. I'm trying to adjust all this music and stuff on this big screen. I think big screens would be easier, but they're not. Oh, and by the way, it's not a podcast. So anyways, I want to welcome Val Uffold. Val, welcome so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know what? So I have to apologize first of all because I got this big screen. I wish you could see how big it is. It's so big.
Your face is massive on it.
No, yours is, just by the way.
Oh, great.
Just not mine, yours is. So, and then I've got cameras here, I got screens up there, lights and all this stuff. And so if I trip over stuff today with this big screen, I apologize already. But anyways, let's talk about what you do. And I liked a little bit about who you are. You are, from everything that I've read about you, you're like the go-to in the industry when it comes to recruitment. And I have so many questions in this subject, in this area, that is, it'll be a great talk tonight. And thank you again for taking the time. I know you're in Toronto tonight, so I know it's 9:30 there and it's 7:30 here out west. So thank you again. I always get amazed to get people in Toronto. We had some people in New York on recently, and I'm like, okay, we'll keep it short so you guys get to bed early. And but we'll have fun tonight with lots of stuff. So let's get you to introduce yourself, who you are, and all the great stuff you do.
Yeah. All right. So I do executive recruiting in the hospitality field only in that space. So that's hotels, restaurants, entertainment, events, anything like that. I've been doing this for about 12 years. My background is in restaurant operations. I was a sommelier and a restaurant manager, and then got into HR in a large restaurant company for 10 years. So I came by recruiting naturally, so to speak. I did lots of internal recruiting. And it gives me a good perspective because I've done the operations role, I've done HR, and now recruiting, and all those bits have really helped me with that recruitment piece because I can see it from all different angles.
Wow. Is this something that it's kind of changed over the years?
Yeah, I mean, every year certainly is completely different depending on what the market's like. And as you sort of mentioned, you know, it's been a big ticket, a big talked about piece in all industries, especially in hospitality. So yeah, the last few years have certainly been a lot of ups and downs and all arounds for sure.
Is I have so much, I don't know where to start here. How much has it changed in a sense where we have AI now coming into so much of our industry, period? Is it coming into this massively as well?
It has. I mean, I don't see it as much. The only time I've seen it is using it as a piece of advice to people that are interviewing and being interviewed, where they can put, you know, ask what questions, like if you take the job description that you're applying for and put that into that chat thing, the AI thing, and I will pop questions that you will be asked and answered how you should answer it in the same way for the interviewers. So that's something I've been using, telling people to use it for. It just actually came into effect it's in reading right now in Ontario. It's probably in other provinces as well, where you can't use AI to answer your job ad. So if you're applying online, they're making that a bill that AI can't be the one to come back to you with. I don't know all the lingo, but they're taking that out of being allowed to use that at all, because it found there's a lot of discriminatory practices involved in that. So those are the only kind of things I've heard about recruiting specifically. But that's pretty interesting, that thing about not allowing it to happen. There's just, I didn't know that. It's tied up with a whole bunch of other bills that people are speaking about. And that's one little part that I haven't heard. I've just recently heard about.
It's got to be hard to even track that or monitor that, because it must change like every day.
It must be. And I have no idea how they even would monitor that. There must be, I don't know, there's got to be some way they do it, but I'm sure
there's a 16-year-old. It's a 16-year-old.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure I can figure it out.
Exactly. Exactly. So can you maybe share a little bit about really what we see right now? Is there a demand for restaurateurs, hotels, everyone? Still, I hear this every day. Mm-hmm. Val, I'm so glad you made the time for us, because I have to get this out. I hear this nonstop about, we have a labor problem. We have a labor problem in the industry. Val, can you tell us, do we seriously have a labor problem?
It is interesting that we still do. But overall, we're hearing there's not that many jobs in Canada. There was something like 190,000 people, new workers in January entering the Canadian job market, and the job market stayed the same. So meaning there should be less jobs, but hospitality still has something like 100,000 open positions. So even though there's a massive shortage across Canada, there's certainly not within hospitality specifically.
Is that jobs that are like a lower pay, or is that a starter?
I think that's all just they've lumped. It's food service and accommodation. So anything in there. So it could be, it could be an entry level position right up to like a C-suite role at a hotel or something. But generally, lots of positions available.
Still lots of positions. Now, do we see people retiring? Is that where that void is coming, or is it just because we're growing the industry so big?
I think there was a few reasons. I think the market was going down even before COVID. There was less people getting into this industry for lots of reasons that we could talk about forever. You know, perception, what people think the industry is all about, parents not suggesting it as a career to their kids, people coming in or taking it at school just to get a degree but not staying in it. So there's lots of different reasons. Then COVID came, so people left en masse. And there was no immigration during all that time as well. And it's typically an industry where there's a lot of new immigrants working in it. So it's going to take us a while to catch up with all that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, like I said, I have lots of questions for you. Yeah. And one of them is, and I find this, is that we haven't really done a great job. And I know Restaurants Canada does, and I love the team that I work over there with, and what they do for our industry. And I do as well. Trying to promote a positive take on our industry, but there was a lot of negativeness through COVID, but even right around now, you still have maybe not an appeal to the generations that want to get into this industry or look at it as a career base. Is that the case? Like, or am I just looking through my lens and don't see people out there being attracted to this industry anymore?
I think that, you know, interesting you bring up Restaurants Canada, because I had a panel discussion and Kelly Higginson, the CEO, was on it talking about this exact thing. And that's what a lot of us are trying to change that, right? To change the perception of it. And there are lots of bits and pieces, but I remember speaking to, she was a VP in HR, a hotel, talking about the fact that we need to sell it to the parents now, because it's an industry that's been misunderstood for many years as, you know, it doesn't seem as a career job. A lot of people think it's like an interim job for a lot of people, and people aren't looking at it, all the different things there are to do in this industry. So I think that's just people speaking about it and starting like right at the high school level to get people even to understand, well, it doesn't mean it doesn't mean you're cooking or serving forever. There's lots of careers you can get into it. And it's sort of starting at that very beginning, because you're right. It does have that. It takes a lot of us to be able to change that thinking about it.
Well, I also, this is my take, is that we also have shows and, you know, the media really would jump on the negative part of the industry, not really talk about the positive all the time, right? Like there would be like a store closing or a restaurant closing, and they'd be out front with a camera and mic talking about, fortunately, this restaurant's closing. So it really wasn't a place that would be drawing people in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those, I mean, a lot of those shows certainly aren't helpful to the people's perception. And when they, and that even changed, you know, when I first started working in restaurants, like over 20 years ago, it wasn't this, you know, the Food Network wasn't around and it became very romanticized and people got into it for reasons that perhaps weren't the reason they used to get into it. And then that just, that also created problems. And then all those TV shows came and everyone had something different than it was. So people are getting into to be a celebrity or then, you know, and again, parents are watching and saying, well, you can't do that. That's not a career option. But it's actually, you and I both know it's not actually like that.
No, it's not. And I know even the ones that say that this is the way it is. I don't think it's as like, I think they over glamour, maybe a little bit over the edge on that part. Like it's not the full truth. And I think we need more shows like Chef, like the movie Chef, where it's very positive and you watch and you want to go buy a food truck right away and get involved in it. I find that we don't do a good enough job to talk about the positive about it. And there's so much positive from it. And I think, do you see this as well? And I think you might've said this, is I get people texting me nonstop so about my hat. So there you go, James.
What does it have on it? I can't.
So here you go, James. So Val, we'll do a commercial for James. This is Beyond Meat. There it is. So there you go, James. I actually had their steak product today for supper. So there you go, James.
Good plug.
And Troy, I moved over to the camera, so thank you for the text as well. But I think we need more positive is my take on this in the industry. But I also need to think, and maybe this is a shift that we'll see, is a career-based, more of a career-based perspective. Because is it different than in the US or in Europe that you see, Val?
I mean, I can comment on Europe where, yes, for sure in Europe. I think the U.S., some of the larger cities where there is more of a culture around dining, perhaps that's a different. But for sure in Europe, it was always, you know, it was always an industry where serving was a career and you went to school. You went to hotel school for 4 years and then you graduated and you became a server. And that was a great career. That was a stable career where you made good money and had good work. Like, you know, there was lots of things. So I think that hasn't necessarily translated over to here yet. But there's problems in Europe now, too, with all sorts of things. But I just think it's just we're just further behind in a lot of things around food or wine or dining or any like the Dolce Vita or whatever like that. Yeah. North America is just a bit behind with all of that stuff. You know, we put a lot of emphasis on, you know, the hard skills or the finance part or the instead of these, I don't know, intangible things, I guess, with having a career in restaurants or hospitality.
So Val, I want to talk a little bit about, and this will be interesting because I have a daughter trying to get into the industry and she's having the craziest time. And I'm so honored that she's kind of following the footsteps of what I did for her career and she's having a hard time. And I don't know if it's because she's new to the industry. She has no experience. Her dad's the Canada's restaurant guy, so I think that would help, but apparently it doesn't. But do you see more still a challenge for women getting into the industry and some leadership roles within the industry? Or is that just gone now? Or is that still something we have to discuss?
No, and it's something I talk about a lot. It is still a big thing. It's
really,
I don't have the exact numbers, but it starts out to be 50-50 with men and women joining the industry in entry-level positions. By the time you get to the top, it's like less than 10% women in senior levels. Yeah. Specifically in food service and accommodation. I mean, that's consistent through all industries, but food service and hospitality specifically has even less representation. And in that 8% or something of C-suite leaders, 90% of those people are in HR. A people role. There's not many. Yeah. So for sure there is. And that's something we need to, and that's a lot of things, you know, I speak to a lot of employers about that as well as like, what do we need to do? There's a labor shortage, but there are a lot of women out there that are leaving because of lots of different reasons. So everyone needs to be think differently and think outside the box and creatively to keep women in the business. because they do start to leave when they get to the management level for a bunch of different reasons. But yeah, it's for sure still a topic that's very much an issue.
Well, do you have ideas really on how we can get rid of this, like, or help get these numbers changed around? Because I find it, and I've heard this for a long time, and I thought we would see a shift by now. And I've heard this maybe for a long, long time.
Yeah, from the beginning of time, I think. I think, you know, everyone was hopeful that maybe this whole shutdown, we would have started to see new ideas. But I feel like, unfortunately, that hasn't really been happening. There are lots of ways. I mean, the one thing is the schedule flexibility, which is not just for women, but for everybody. And I just actually did a talk about this recently, that it's only ever women that come to me and say, oh, I need to pick my kids up from daycare. I can't work nights and weekends anymore. But not one man, maybe one man is calling me to say the same thing. So that's the question I put out there. Why is that? And is it chicken or the egg? Who knows? And what that happens, but there's lots of things that need to change. And that is one thing, is that schedule flexibility, understanding that it's still traditionally the woman's burden to figure out the kid thing. Women have to put their hands down and reach up and pull women up with mm-hmm. them for sure. But men also need to do that, because if there's only less than 10% women, then men have to be the ones to consciously help women stay and pull them up with them, sort of thing. Because mm-hmm. women, you know, if it's just women doing it, then it's not going to be as effective when there's already so few women in it.
It kind of makes sense. And is that the same thing with different people coming into the country? They must even have it harder.
Related to women?
Yeah.
I would think so. And again, it's also very cultural. Because there's a lot of people that, again, we're talking about the perception of the industry. So in some cultures, you only can be a professional, or that's what, because you come to a new country. And so we need to change that perception too, but I'm sure it is harder. I don't know what the stats are for new immigrants that are female, but I'm sure it's harder because they're starting entry level, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then there would be barriers with language and all the challenges, and just learning the industry in Canada is going to be different from a different country.
Yeah.
And that's going to be very challenging.
Yeah. And that actually is interesting, because they just, that's also in this new law that's passing. The same one that had about the AI thing. Yep. You're not allowed to anymore by law, as soon as it passes, put needs Canadian experience on the job posting.
People were doing that?
Yeah, that's also just all. I don't know if it's passed yet. Maybe it has, but like 2 weeks ago, it hadn't passed yet. But there'll be, you no longer can put Canadian experience needed on any job ads in Ontario.
Really?
Mm-hmm. For that reason, because, okay, if there's a labor shortage, then what, like, you... It's not like you're a doctor or a lawyer that needs a license to work mm-hmm. in a restaurant. I mean, the no Canadian experience is kind of a bunch of, doesn't really, it's not real anyway.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, we have to be a little bit more flexible mm-hmm. in allowing people into this industry, because most of the part of the industry is skills that can be taught.
Yeah. A lot of it's personality, as you know. I mean, it's the soft skills. Like you can teach someone how to, you know, to cook a steak or to open a 100%. Bottle of wine, but you can't teach them that sort of emotional experience you can give the guest, or that how to communicate, or that warm personality. So I think that's a positive thing about our industry, is that mm-hmm. a lot can be taught. We just have to show people that there's a lot of great things to do in this industry.
Well, I've seen a lot of really good operators out there, and these are more of that, franchise model operators that are larger, that can pretty much can take anyone off the street and say, we can make you a chef, or we can make you a server. And they have programs built into their companies. That's how I started. I didn't know anything. I had no idea. No idea. I still don't, by the way. I started, and I remember going, wow, this is way different than what TV, it wasn't even TV, was not even glamorizing. That's how long ago it was. But it was a point where they allowed me to grow through it. Like, and it was so supportive. And I remember them saying, you know, our really belief is that we can make anyone a chef as long as you learn those basic skills. And I think we need more people like that. And I think we need more operations like that. And hopefully there is. But I know I'm living it right now with my daughter trying to find her a job in the industry. And I'm blown away.
Yeah. And that also what you just said is exactly true for everything. So if there's a labor shortage, then you don't want to lose the people that you have. So the whole thing about retention is a massive topic too. And a lot of that comes from what you're saying is, okay, yeah, for sure, you can bring people in and train them on the basic skills. But what about those people that have already mastered that? You need to keep them in your company. So then you give them something else and you put them on a training path to get them to another role. And then once they've done that, then you move them into another position, and that's sort of what I did. I was in restaurants and then I worked operations and then I liked HR. So I put my hand up and said, I want to develop a training manual, but managers can do that with their staff, like identify what people want to keep them. Yeah. Like you said, you train them how to be a chef. Once they've mastered that, train them how to do something else and keep them around.
How hard is it for operators to keep people, to retain them?
Well, that's a huge thing.
Because it was a time. Like, do you remember like 10 years ago, I remember the whole thing. People were like, well, I'll move over here for 10 cents more or a quarter or whatever is a dollar more. Is that gone now or is that something still or is it hard?
No, that was in fact last year or 2022 and 2023. It was more than ever because there was such a labor shortage. Employees knew that they had the power. People were moving all over the place for, $1,000 more. They moved, then 2 months later moved somewhere else because they knew they had the power they were in control and they knew it. So that for sure is happening. I think that slowed down a little bit. You know, there was bidding wars last year for people's kind of like a housing, the housing war.
Wait a second. There was bidding wars?
Bidding wars. I remember saying to clients last year, like, come to the table with your best offer, just like you would in a housing situation, because there was so few people. Wow. And employees knew that, to your point. So people were moving. And so, turnover was the most it's ever been last year, I'd say, end of 2022, beginning 2023. It seems to have, from just like anecdotally, sort of plateaued a bit. Like, it's not as crazy, but still, there's still, I mean, it's one of the highest turnover industries. I think it is number one, and retail's number two. Yeah.
Serious. Mm-hmm. So I have a question on this because I know as chefs, and I just was working with a whole bunch of really high-end chefs for a podcast project that we're working on. And it seemed to be something, not like an expectation of them moving from restaurant to restaurant, but it was a way that they were building their portfolio and how they were actually, it was almost like, because back when I was in kitchens, you stayed no matter what. It wasn't like you hopped from one to one and you kept hopping. Is that normal for a lot of chefs to still to do that, to from hop from one restaurant to another? Or is that just a group of chefs that do that? Or is that normal?
Yeah, I think that's normal. When I worked in operations, I worked at like a fine dining restaurant in Toronto for many years. And that was in that level, at the highest level of dining, the chefs, that was always, and they actually told you that in chef school that, it wasn't 3 months, but like a year at a time, it was okay to work here for a year because you're right. You wanted to build your portfolio. And I still think that is a thing. I think there's less sort of questions around a chef that's done early in their career moving around as there would be someone in the front of house, because that was considered part of the culture. You want as many experiences from as many different chefs as you can get. But yes, I would say that's still a thing.
So Val, we have a lot of people that watch us from all over the world here on our show. And I know there's a lot of people on TikTok as well, watches on the show, and they're looking about coming to Canada. Maybe they're moving to Canada or what it is. What are some tips or things that they should look at to get involved into the industry?
I'd say the first thing that I tell people is to be flexible about what you're going to do, because I feel that, and people need to be realistic. So I would say generally when you're, even if you're coming with Canadian experience and changing your career, you have to sometimes take a step back to move forward. So I would say that would be the number one thing. There are a lot of jobs out there, but even though there's no, it doesn't matter about Canadian experience, so to speak, I feel like there's people just have to be realistic in what they want to do. There's so many tips for anyone with things like this, but I would always say, get your name out there as much as you can. You're coming in, you identify come up with a list of where you want to work, do your research, contact as many people as you can on LinkedIn, send them a note. You want to get your name known by as many people as possible, because you need to stand out, especially if we had 180,000 people enter the job market last month, or sorry, in January, right? So I feel like that's it. You just have to be relentless on going after what you want, and you can't just accept that you're going to apply and that's it. It's a lot of follow-up. It becomes a full-time job to look for a full-time job, and you kind of have to go in with that mindset.
It's like a strategy, right? You have to have a strategy, a roadmap. I'm putting that together. Do you have any tips and stuff like that that you can share on how to stand out on LinkedIn?
Yeah, there are all sorts of, and there's lots of people that do this. Like, there's so many tips, and I will never say I'm an expert at LinkedIn stuff. I can tell you about how to stand out in interviews and resumes and stuff. But for LinkedIn, I would say the one main thing I've been telling people is not to put your title. You're just supposed to put a bunch of keywords, and that really does work. So if someone's doing a search, they're not putting in chef. You're on your title, it should say loves food, creative, something in that tagline, and then in your job experience, it will say what your role is.
So you take so I know what you're talking about. So the title of your name.
Yeah.
And then underneath it, there's a brief blurb.
That's you don't where
put you want the title in there.
The tag, your tag things.
Like keywords.
Yeah.
So when they're searching for things like restaurants or marketing or chefs, that is the information that they're going to hit on.
All your words are in there. Like, your chef is still there in your title, but you're giving yourself more, there'll be more, you're open to more people what they're going to find.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say that's kind of seems to be a red flag for a lot of employers is making sure that your resume and your LinkedIn are the same. It happens all the time that they're not
serious?
The same.
No way.
Same. Yeah. There's often like
totally different dates of
different school, or different things missing, or it's not up to date. It'll have a job from two times before. There's one on your resume that's not on your LinkedIn. So that sets off red flags.
No way.
Making sure update a picture. I would always say take off that green open to work thing.
Okay, please. Everyone that's watching this, Val, that is my biggest pet peeve. And I love everyone that's using it. I know the purpose. But please take that bloody green thing off your thing. Tell us why, because I think I know why, but I want to hear from you. You're the expert.
I just think that there's still, whether it's true or not, there's an idea out there that the people that are employed are the best people to hire. So if you have a job, you're going to be more marketable. And so you don't want to advertise that you don't have a job. They're going to find out anyway, but why put that rate out there as the first thing you're telling them? There's lots of other things you can tell them other than that thing at the beginning.
It's not, maybe it doesn't feel like, you know, you're trying to, maybe not like you said, you have to work at it to get the job or the career you want. Does that look like it's kind of like this really simple way of saying, hey, I'm looking for a job?
Well, that's all. Yeah. And I also think it's the same thing when you go to an interview and the same thing, if you see on LinkedIn, there's one company that has five different job openings and you apply to all of them, say you want any of them. That's also not good. It's the same thing. You don't want to be specific and look like you have a goal. You're going for something. You're working toward, not just like, oh, I'll just take anything. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I have so many questions more, Val. This is great. By the way, thank you again. And just a quick shout out to everyone. James, if you're still watching, I did have some Beyond Burger product today in an air fryer, like I taught you. And everyone, please send us questions and everything for Val if you have questions and stuff on Instagram or TikTok or LinkedIn. We've got everything set up so we can get the comments and stuff here. But Val, first of all, this is just outstanding, all these ideas and stuff like this. Biggest question, how important is the picture on LinkedIn? Your picture, AI? I got AI. I'll admit it. I'm that guy. I got an AI picture there. Is that hitting people hard, or is that matter even?
Oh, I've never even thought of that AI thing. You mean because they're fake, like they're enhanced photos or something?
Oh, I look like I'm 20 years old. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's better. I think it is like you're not applying for jobs, it's okay. But I think if it is an interview setting, I think you want it as close as possible to what you look like, because again, you want to feel like, you know the person when you're in an interview with someone. So it's, if you're already nervous about something, you don't want to walk in and they don't recognize who you are. You want them already to know, to have that feeling of familiarity, because interviews are already a natural setting. So why make it worse when you're expecting someone else to show up?
It's like the Tinder profile.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, oh no. Yeah. What's it called? Catfishing or something? Or yeah. It's, exactly. Yeah. It would be the same. I think it's the same thing. I think just like, you know, it's, and the other thing with the picture is like, it should be a professional photo, like not you holding your dog or your kid or.
Please
take. It doesn't have to be a headshot. Don't take that as much anymore. With your phone, but don't have like, or your wedding picture or whatever.
Is LinkedIn still like I know a lot of people, I know LinkedIn itself is shifting away to not necessarily be the platform that is like the job board place to be, but is it still the place to be where people are looking for employers or people are looking for jobs? Is still like one of the main places?
I would say that's still, I would say that's the main place that people like, not job, like as far as job postings, Indeed, all those places for sure. But no, I would say LinkedIn is still like the main spot for professional, for like those sorts of jobs. I mean, if it's and they're also on Indeed, but I'd say that is more where it seems to be. Where more recruiters are looking, where more HR departments are looking. Sure, they put stuff on Indeed, but I would say that the majority of people, hiring managers that I speak to, there's not great results coming from Indeed. They have better results with LinkedIn because it's set up just to be a very professional place.
Yeah. Is there, so like I said, I've got quite a few questions here. I don't want to take all your time. It'll be 2 a.m. We'll be still asking questions on this. I want to talk about a little bit of that process, okay, of having a recruiter or not having a recruiter. How important it is to have a recruiter today? Because when my daughter was looking to start, she had the company reach out and said, you have to go through our recruiter to get the job. And we did not know that. It would have been helpful a couple of years ago when she started.
Right. Yeah.
But is that something that you recommend people using, is recruiters?
Well, that would be what she's talking about, is a different kind of recruiter. That would be an internal recruiter. Like each company would have their own recruitment team as part of the HR team. Yeah. So, but recruiters, like what I do would be, you know, more senior people that, you know, I wouldn't be able to help anyone with an entry level job because no one's going to pay me to find someone that's has no experience.
Yeah.
But for sure. I mean, a lot of what you're doing, a lot of it's now an like applicant tracking system, right? Like you were saying. Okay, so
what is that? Tell us what is that.
You know, if you on Indeed or on LinkedIn or anything, if there's a link where you have to fill something out and send it through where you're not actually getting to a human, you're just sending it out there and hoping someone sees it. That's where I'd always suggest find out, do that, because you're right. You still have to go through that way because they're you know, their procedure is to go through that system, but still don't just do that. Again, you have to go above. If you want to stand out, then you need to then go on LinkedIn, find out who the talent acquisition or recruitment manager is in that company, send them a LinkedIn message, send as many people as you can telling them that you applied already. But I wouldn't just send that in and expect, because half the time you don't even get to a human. You're just
really.
Yeah. So there's, you need to, the job ad, there's specific keywords in the job ad, the job description. Yep. You need to make sure those words are in your resume, even if you just put them in there somewhere, because that computer system is picking up the keywords and will not send you on to a human unless you actually have those keywords. There's another tip that I've been speaking about recently as well. If you send, you know how you're supposed to send your resume in a PDF format because it makes it look more professional. But if you're applying through an ATS, an applicant tracking system, the studies show that they are more likely to kick out a PDF resume than a Word resume. So if you're sending in Word format, if you're sending to an email, like an actual person, then send it in a PDF.
So sending through the system, Word doc, no PDF, email, PDF.
Yeah. Because PDF looks better. We know that, which is why we've always told people send in a PDF. Well, not nothing to change.
I think LinkedIn, does LinkedIn recommend a PDF even?
Well, every single company will be using a different It just had the link to it, and you click on it. There's hundreds of different software programs that companies buy to sort through the resumes.
Wow. And I'm assuming that's getting more sophisticated as well.
Yeah, which is why they just made that rule where they can't, because they found that they were getting, that AI was getting, figuring out, like, if it was a man applying or a woman, it was like discriminatory hiring factors by this computer. So yeah, it's getting more sophisticated.
I've heard this terminology is used for recruiters, and this is my daughter telling me this stuff, is use AI against AI when it comes to these ATS systems. Is that true?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't heard that. It could be that. Okay. Those things I don't profess to know anything about AI things, but I'm sure that is going to happen. It's the same thing with kids writing their essays using ChatGPT, and then now there's another program that can detect use ChatGPT.
Val, I'm sure you could pick out a resume that was AI written versus.
Well, it's funny because I just read something about that, and they showed how you can, and it is pretty obvious, but I feel like most people aren't reading. Like, most people spend 5 to 6, most hiring managers spend 5 to 6 seconds looking at a resume.
Wait, 5 to 6 seconds on a resume? That's it?
Yeah. 5 to 6 seconds on a resume tends to be what people spend looking at it. So they're not picking out if AI wrote it or not. They're looking where you worked, what the dates are, that kind of thing.
Unbelievable.
For that first screening anyway. Afterwards, if you're in for an interview, then they would read it. But that first thing, they're not spending that much time looking at your resume.
Val, I saw on a LinkedIn not that long ago, someone that actually was doing a post about who they were. In a sense, it was like a resume, but it was like it was a circle, and it had all the different learning skills that they had, their skill sets, their different aspects of what they've done in their lives. But it was built into a one page, and then they put it on LinkedIn. And I actually thought it was like, I felt like it was a different way of looking at a resume or looking at someone's experience. Is that something you recommend, or should we still stay with the traditions?
I mean, I think for LinkedIn, it's a smart idea because, again, you want to stand out. You still need to have that traditional resume, but on LinkedIn, for sure, I think that is a great idea, and you want to keep it short and sweet. That's, you don't want a resume any longer than 2 pages.
Okay, 2 pages rule.
2 pages max. You don't want to talk about your, high school jobs and stuff, unless you're just got out of high school, obviously.
What if you're an over-accomplished person? Mm-hmm. That is past 2 pages. I've heard people do this too.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone can write it. A lot of people can write a resume that's 5 pages long, but I feel like people need to
narrow it down.
There doesn't have to be a lot of, you don't have to go really far back. Your current position, your last 3 positions will sort of give you an idea of where you were before that. You obviously didn't go from being, a lifeguard to being a CEO. So
yeah.
Knows there's a bunch of jobs in between.
Wow.
Because again, you want it short. So yeah, I think that idea you said about LinkedIn, someone had a graph or whatever. I think that's it's kind of giving them a snap. Like, people don't want to swipe. Even if you send a message to someone or a job ad, it's not supposed to be longer than a phone. Cause if you have to swipe, it's too long. So the same thing could be said for LinkedIn too.
Holy cow.
Short attention spans we have now.
Now you need a master class, by the way. I don't know if you do master classes.
You'll have to go give your daughter some to give her some of these.
Yeah, I'm writing it all down for her. Don't worry.
Tell her to call me and I will walk her through some stuff.
I love it. I think, well, now why has it gotten like this? Okay, because back in the day, I haven't done the job looking for a year. I don't plan on it either, but I am, in a sense, always wondering, how did it get to this? Is it because people messed with the system? Did people cheat the system? Did we hire the wrong people? Are we looking to hire people better?
How did it get to what? The labor shortage or?
Well, no. Just the sophistication that we have to make sure the resumes are 2 pages.
Well, it's like everything. It's like everything. It's like even, I always feel like it was easier when things were just like paper and pencil. Because so, but that's just my generation or whatever. I think that it's like everything has become like, it's a generational thing, I guess. Every generation like, oh, it's too, there's too much stuff going on now. But I think that's what it is. I think there's, it's just what's bound to happen. There's so many.
Still bring resumes into stores? Do people still bring resumes into hotels?
I don't even know because to your point, you're not even, you can't even really do that. I mean, I think if you walked into like the local coffee shop or the local restaurant with a resume, fair. But then if you walked into a hotel, they would literally say to you, you got to go online and apply through the ATS. Like they don't, like if you had a piece of paper, it wouldn't, it doesn't mean anything to them.
Isn't that crazy?
It's all online now.
That's how it was our generation, Val.
Yes, I know. But I mean, there's still, again, you could still walk in with a paper resume and you're, again, you're making yourself stand out as long as the next day you send a message on LinkedIn saying, hey, I delivered a resume yesterday and now I'm going to go on your online track, on your online system and apply. There's no harm in doing it. You're only making yourself stand out because no one does it.
I know.
Yeah.
Wow. I want to talk a little bit about the C-suite in the hotel, in the industry, and how and what people are looking for when it comes to that, the top level of running organizations, hospitality groups. Is there still people looking for those roles, or are those roles filling in? And if they are looking for those roles, are what's some of those traits that they're looking for in individuals? What are they looking for?
I think there's still lots of those. I think because, again, we've heard about how the demographics are changing. Baby boomers are retiring. That's generally who are in those roles. So they are, more of those roles will be coming up. Yeah. We also lost a lot, you know, during COVID, we spoke a lot about, you know, the servers and the cooks and the sous chefs leaving, but there was holes everywhere because people, you know, at the highest level were like, well, in hotels or restaurants were like, I'm out because I don't want to go back to the way it was where my whole team was let go and had to start from scratch and do all the work I did 20 years ago. So there are more openings and more coming, but I think it's the same thing with it. Like it's always been, I feel like it's well-rounded. The more successful people have come from somewhere within and understand lots of different areas of that industry. So it's not, but also having lots of different experiences, whether it be, you know, some corporate, some entrepreneurial, I think that, and there's always still going to be those soft skills in all hospitality. Like even if you are the CEO of the Marriott, you still have to understand that you're in the hospitality business. So there's always going to be that.
I do see a lot of C-suite people becoming younger. Is that normal too?
As people are retiring.
Or am I just getting older, Val? I don't know.
I'm all against ageism for sure. As an older person, yeah. But yeah, I think it's, yeah, for sure there's people, because it's also because of, to your point, everything's so AI and that sort of technology, where I think it's the younger generation that understands that. So yeah, you do need to bring in certainly in some areas, business areas more than others, you need to know all the new stuff. And maybe those people that are, who've been around longer, don't know as much. So it makes sense that you see more younger C-suite people.
I want to talk as we wrap up here, Val. I have a question here on seasonal business. As golf courses are opening up again, I see people, I have been talking to some of the people that I work with in the golf industry. A lot of golf courses are looking for GMs. Is it going to be even, and I've heard how hard it is. I was at a golf conference this past fall, and it sounds ridiculously hard to find people in seasonal accounts. Is that going to get better, or are we going to see that also be a challenge? Or do you hear anything around seasonal accounts?
Well, this was interesting that you heard that, because I, in fact, heard the exact opposite. Well, it might change again this year, but I heard the exact opposite, where the resort towns out by you were always very, very hard for people, for them to find people. But for the last few years, as it's become more expensive to live in cities, they've actually had, for the first time ever, more people than they need in the resort properties out west and resort properties than there are that they do in the properties in Toronto, because people are graduating from university and saying, well, I can't afford that rent. I'm going to go live out there for 2 years where there's accommodation and live there. So there, golf courses are maybe different, but it's been easier for them to find, as cost of living has increased, for them to find seasonal workers. that are there because of the accommodation. And so, in fact, it was one large resort chain that actually closed down part of their hotel for staff accommodation. Yeah. Because that made more sense for them. The cost benefit analysis was better if they closed it down and had staff living there than it was to open it for guests. It was made them more money to do that.
Well, I know that Banff was always a hard time for Banff to find people.
And that's it's been easier for them the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's great. That's great news. See, there's always positive news in our industry. Yeah.
There's no one in the hotels in Toronto, but they're all there now. I know it's like,
come on out.
Yeah, goes in waves, I guess.
It's great because, the tourism comes into those small towns, right? And the tourism business is so big for us out here in the West. And when we hear that, it really means that the tourism is going to, people are coming in to from different countries to see these beautiful places are going to have a great experience. And that's great news. That is good news.
There's a silver lining.
Yeah, I'm hoping golf courses, like the golf course event I was at, it was the main event for the year for all golf course when it comes to clubs. And they did say it was difficult this past year. And I kind of kept telling them in the conference, and I was doing a presentation to them, that we really need to just talk about more of the positive about the industry when it comes to what they do, because I also think working at a golf course is pretty cool as well. And also those golf courses really do cater and support these people that are coming in, either first time jobs or starting as a chef or running there. And you can move very up very fast with a golf course. And I'm hoping that it's good for them as well this year because they really need it. They're doing great and they're busy. They're crazy busy.
Yeah. Too. I mean, I think I do work with private clubs as well, recruiting for them. And I feel like, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of, I think it's just like people understanding what it is. I mean, a lot of people understand restaurants because people go to restaurants all the time, but not everyone goes to clubs. So it's not top of mind for them. So it's more just about getting the word out there. That's it's the same industry.
Val, as we wrap up here, and like I said, thank you to everyone that's joined us tonight on TikTok. Thanks for all all the text to everyone, thank you, and everyone on Instagram and everyone on LinkedIn and stuff like this and Facebook. I do have a question here, Val, as we wrap up. Last couple tidbits for you. If you had someone coming to you and say, Val, what do I do? What's the first thing I do? Can you give us just two tips as we wrap up tonight that they will never forget in their whole life, even if they start a job, quit a job, whatever it is? What's the two things you tell someone
around looking for a job?
Yeah.
Well, the one tip I always will say, the one tip that I think is really important, I'm going to reiterate because I already said, is get your name known as many places as you can. Don't just send a resume. Find every single person you can on LinkedIn or find their email. You can find out what someone's email is by looking, how does, Fairmont do their find the name and put at Fairmont. Send as many emails as you can to get your name out there. When you get an interview with the hiring manager, send an email to that hiring manager the night before to say, nice to meet you. See you on LinkedIn again, because then they see your face and you've made that initial connection. That helps take away some of the nervousness that it is going into the interview the next day. And then this is three, but.
Oh, you can give us 10 and keep going.
The whole thing about practicing, like people will say to me, I interview all the time. Practice makes perfect. And there's a legit reason why that saying is around, is because you need to practice talking about yourself in front of a mirror over and over again about your strengths, how good you are in making eye contact. Practice is what makes a huge difference, because interviews are stressful and there's ways to make yourself feel more comfortable. The more prepared you are, the more comfortable you'll be, the more confident you'll be, the more likely you'll get a job. So practice is the massive thing that not enough people do when they're just before the interview.
That's such great advice. I'll share that with my daughter as well.
It is hard. It's awkward to talk to a mirror, but it does make a difference. It helps.
Absolutely. Because I find that even just doing podcasts and stuff like this, I tell you, it took 1,500 shows later to make me comfortable to even do a TikTok.
Yeah. And things like that.
But it does. It's practice, right?
Yeah, practice, right.
Well, Val, I want to thank you so much. It's late. It's almost 10:30 in Toronto. And I just want to thank you. You are so knowledgeable in this space. And I just can't thank you enough for taking the time, sharing some information with us, talking about this, and giving some good stuff to talk about as well. I'm just blown away. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, get your daughter to give me a call, and I'm happy to share more tips.
Okay, last, where do people find you if they want to reach out, follow you, all that stuff? Where do they go?
Yeah, so Val Upfold is my Instagram. And actually on there, there's a whole bunch of interview tips right on there. So there's a like a highlight icon called interview tips. And I do all sorts of reels, tips and tricks about interviewing and resumes. I post all sorts of stuff on, there's more on Instagram because I can do the reels there. LinkedIn also has some stuff, but Instagram has an added bonus of a bunch of different, more interview and resume tips.
Awesome. Well, Val, send me that and I will then put it up on my channels as well. All right. And then I'll include it in my newsletter this weekend.
Great.
And promote your stuff out there. I just thank you enough. This is so valuable for everyone. And the industry is a great place to work. It's a phenomenal place to work. I've been in it this is my 34th year. Next week will be 34 years in the industry. And I've had a great career. And I get to do this awesome stuff now too. Yeah. So
it is. We just got to get the word out that there's lots of, you know, there's lots of jobs and it's lots of fun and you can learn a lot. And there's the sky's the limit what you can do.
It is. It really is. And you don't have to just be a chef. You don't just have to be a server.
That's right.
Has anyone ever counted how many jobs there are in the food service?
Probably. There's the same, almost same amount of jobs as any, I think it's any industry. It's probably more because there's so many different pieces of hospitality.
I'm going to have to Google that later, Val.
You have to know the answer. How many hundreds of jobs there are? Thousands of titles, yeah.
Titles and titles and titles, right? Yeah, so anyways, thank you again, Val. Thank you again for joining us tonight. And check out Val. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care. Have a good weekend. Bye.